Welcome to Home Space and Reason, a podcast about creating a home that thrives.
Hi there, I'm Christina Browning, your host.
If you know your home could be so much more than it is, I discuss home functionality, aesthetics, and automation. I'm a realtor in Portland, Oregon, and a home functionality coach. I geek out on every subject imaginable regarding your home and yard, challenging you to think of your space differently to get the most out of every square foot, no matter if you reside in 4,500 square feet or 350. I pose questions for you to think through about your space and your reason. This podcast is all positive, offering you virtual fist bumps and celebrating every win. Remember, there's no such thing as perfect, but you can still aim for your best every day. Join me on social by searching for the handle Space and Reason. In this episode, let's discuss the choices we make in our home and then examine why and what might be influencing us. How do home renovation shows impact our idea of the perfect space? The phrase, "it's perfect," is heard so often during the end of the montages in these shows. And how does this flow over into feeling the need to buy products or make specific choices? Hearing the phraseology, "it's perfect," over and over might be part of why we strive for perfection and constantly feel like we fall short when our homes drive us crazy. My guest today is the professor of sociology at Valencia College in Florida. She is the author of many books on pop culture, including Gender and Pop Culture, Feminist Theory and Pop Culture, The Politics of Gender, The Beyoncé Effect, Essays on Race, Sexuality, and Feminism, Fangirls and Media, Creating Characters, Consuming Culture, among others. I want to read you the first paragraph of her incredibly endearing biography. It says, "I've always been curious about how culture influences a society. I was born and raised in a small northern Michigan town on Lake Michigan. When I was 10, our local library put a 12-book limit on the amount of materials that could be checked out during a 2-week period. At that time, I was reading one Nancy Drew mystery, the new edition, for those of you in the know, or one Sweet Valley High book a day. My mother struck a deal with the library to allow me 14 books per checkout, mostly because my need for books was breaking the budget of 2 social workers. But she also knew how curious I was about life outside of our small community."
I'm Dr. Adrienne Trierbienek, and my background is sociology, so my PhD is in sociology. And I look at the connection between gender and pop culture. And this topic is so, after you said something, I have not stopped thinking about it. It fits so well with a lot of the things that we talk about in terms of like, what can people afford? How does the housing market factor into, especially like new homeowners? But not just that, just the things that happen on HGTV that have seemingly become really normal. Like, you can redo your entire house for $30,000. Like, as a homeowner, I am very aware that that's not possible.
Also, you can have it redone in 60 minutes.
Yeah. You know, the 2-day period is totally realistic to have your house gutted and put back together. There's never going to be any issues there. Or whatever issues are so simple that we can just make a quick phone call. And I think I saw one once on Fixer Upper where they needed to install a new furnace and they did it for like $2,000. And I was just like, that's, where are you getting your furnace from? Like, that's an insanely low price for that.
Also, I think it's a testament to the fact that they're in Texas and it's so different. Viewers are all over the world. And so it doesn't translate necessarily.
Yes. purchasing that in Los Angeles would be a very different situation.
Totally. And I'm from Portland, Oregon, so 100% different here as well. I wanted to just introduce a short excerpt from Architectural Digest article that appeared on July 29th in 2019 called An Inside Look at How HGTV Became an Industry Juggernaut. And this one paragraph stood out. And it says, when Kenneth Lowe conceived of HGTV in the early 1990s, the national conversation about where we live was much different, if it existed at all. Home building and home design 20 years ago was this deep, dark mystery. People just didn't understand it. And a lot of what HGTV has done is educate the public, Lowe says. It used to be just shelter. You need a home. Now it's more about what's my lifestyle, what's my family's lifestyle, and how's my home going to best fit and serve it. So I feel like that has totally introduced, well, who am I? What is my brand, if you will? Even if you're just, you know, Joe Schmo, suddenly I have to have a look. I have to have an opinion about all this.
And the right opinion and the right look. Or whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah. I'm curious what your reaction is to that.
I think it's fascinating. I think there's a lot of pressure because I was a realtor first before I got into home functionality coaching. A lot of times people would make decisions based on the resale and not necessarily on what really spoke to them. So if you feel like, gosh, this home is really outdated, let's bring it up to, you know, modern day, and they're going to just paint it all white or gray because that's safe, or cream, whatever that neutral is. I don't think people are necessarily asking themselves what speaks to me personally. It's all about resale. And that also may be part of the reason why people are only living in homes for 6 years before they sell. And you can't accumulate any kind of wealth when you keep selling and buying and selling and buying and selling and buying.
That's so interesting. I'm in Florida, and one of the issues I think we run into here is we've got a lot of developers building the exact same home over and over again. And then when you look at the insides, I mean, that some things are different in terms of like maybe layout, but for the most part, it's very similar homes everywhere you go. And you can kind of see the HGTV-ness of it all, where the bare palette, white walls, basic kitchen with whatever granite you want to have, like all of that is very common down here. I know that's very similar in a lot of like suburban areas to have similarly shaped homes, but
it's a cookie cutter. And I refer to that as a builder special.
Yes, that's exactly what we exist very much in that down here, of very little diversity in terms of what a home can look like, unless you're in like a historical Floridian area where people have said this is, you know, we're going to keep the history of this and keep it looking a similar way. But the urban sprawl situation here is very real, and the exact copy of homes is very real.
100%. The sameness in aesthetics. So there's a Washington Post article that I found fascinating, and the writer, it was written by Rachel, I think it's Kurzius, pardon me if I'm slaughtering her last name. She wrote an article titled, HGTV is making our homes boring and us sad.
I read that and laughed.
So just to bring everybody up to speed, I'm going to read a little excerpt. If you've ever watched a home makeover show on HGTV, you know the key before sequence is when the camera critically pans over the house and the host points out everything that needs to be fixed. The decor, cluttered. The paint, cringe. Overall takeaway is that the home is in an utter embarrassment and needs a total overhaul before anyone of taste would consider putting a doormat out front. That was fabulously written. Mm-hmm. But her point in this article is that it leads to frustration and a pause. They're worried about getting it wrong. So they don't choose anything that has any kind of personality.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that, actually. I had that on my list. Do you notice that when you go out with people who are looking at homes? Do you notice that they've kind of been influenced by what they've been seeing on television shows?
I do. And I've also had clients on the other end saying, ew, this has no personality, and they want to go to more historical areas and buy an older home specifically because it has the character that they're looking for. I think when people are thinking of a forever home, especially if it's not a stepping stone, if it's not their first purchase, they think of something that kind of holds them close. And by that, I mean, it feels like something that has history and can be a part of their life for the next 10 or 20 years. And to do that, it can't feel like a sterile operating room, can't lack character. That doesn't feel personal or cozy or enveloping.
Yeah. When I read that, I was thinking about the literature around like the culture of perfection, where people are kind of sold this idea that if you can not necessarily be perfect, but look perfect, that you will somehow fool everyone into thinking your life is ideal. And HGTV seems to have been on the forefront of that, where there is this, whether it's the organization shows or the, there was one that was on for a long time where they redid a room in like a day. But there's this notion that if you can make it perfect, or if you can make it look perfect, that you will now be perceived as this person who has it all together, got the perfect life, perfect home, family, all of that will fall in line if you can have this ideal thing. And what I think that person was saying in the article was that this is insanely boring in that sense, because nobody's life looks like that.
The other thing that's fascinating is those are all staged. Even those homeowners featured in that show don't get that house that looks like that once the show stops filming. That all goes away. All the contents is not even theirs. So what we're seeing is almost a misrepresentation. And I'm not saying I don't love HGTV, because I do. But at the same time, you have to sort of look at it through a lens of realism, in that this was staged beautifully.
Yeah.
And unless those homeowners choose to buy that staging, which a lot of times they can, it's not going to look like that a week later. It's literally, the end result is literally not even the end. It's not the end result.
Yeah. It's kind of like if you look at like the realtor websites like Zillow and realtor.com, there's the fisheye effect, right? That some folks use to make things look bigger. And then when you walk in, you're like, oh, this isn't what the picture looked like. It's kind of...
That is the biggest pet peeve of mine as a realtor ever, because it's misrepresenting the space.
Yeah.
And it wastes everybody's time. And so I have a big talk with the photographer when I have homes photographed, in that I don't want anything stretched, because if you think of a room as being a certain size and you take the time out of your day to go look at that home and you get there and you realize it is nothing like the photo appeared, that you're going to leave. You're not going to suddenly fall in love with it. And so everybody's time is wasted in that, and it drives me crazy.
I can see why.
I do staging, funny enough, complimentary staging in my listings, because a lot of times people don't understand how a home can look and what is possible, but it is not top to bottom bringing in furniture. It is most of the time using the furniture of the people who live there. And more often than not, I'm bringing in plants, because it's amazing how much greenery can help a space feel homey, even in photos, and make such a big difference. I know you mentioned the fandom of some of the HGTV hosts, and the Property Brothers, I think, are the top cream of the crop when it comes to building a following, media franchise, spinoffs, net worth. It is insane how big their empire is now.
Yeah. I think them and Chip and Joanna Gaines, right, are the most successful to have come out of the HGTV TV bubble.
Yeah. And Ben and Aaron, the hometown host, they are pretty significant as well. Mm-hmm. And I think it's fascinating how different all three of those are if you look at them as groups. Mm. It's so interesting that they're all so very different, but they've all had a meteoric rise.
I think what's interesting about the Property Brothers is there is the attraction of them being twins and also extremely good looking. And the show just seems like they've figured out the formula, right? Where you get the brother dynamic mixed with the redoing home dynamic. It's funny to me that people attach themselves to a fandom of this type of thing, because normally fandoms are like, we see them as like obsessive groups of folks who are just beyond what a normal person would be interested in. But the Gaineses and the Property Brothers have busted through that bubble. I mean, Joanna Gaines is in every Target, and I think they have their own channel now, or they used to.
They do. The Magnolia Network.
Yeah. They've kind of created a space for themselves where people can get really obsessive about what they're doing to make their homes look great and how that can be brought back to their home. And it's also kind of a genius marketing move, because you've got built-in product, right? Where people can see Chip and Joanna Gaines bought French doors, so I'm going to go buy French doors.
Absolutely. And
whatever it is they're using that week.
There's a whole sustainability conversation that I could have there, but I had to insert this little hilarious tidbit. The Property Brothers show apparently was almost called Bros before Renos.
What?
I found that hilarious.
Oh, that's such a terrible title. I'm so glad they did something else.
Oh my gosh. So sustainability, I find that topic to be all up in the middle of all this, because when you go into a home and it maybe is like 10 years out of date, I'm using air quotes here, and I see people on these shows and in real life just tearing out the countertops, tearing out the cabinets, and hucking it in these giant, you know, dumpsters. Mm-hmm. That is literally going into the ground to be buried. Mm-hmm. And I think we use the word garbage frivolously, like it miraculously disappears, mm-hmm. instead of the reality that it's going into the earth for the next 10,000 years. And so I like when I see the reuse of some of these cabinets. We have a homeless crisis across the country. And to think that so many of these cabinets, or you name it, whatever, may not be in vogue at the moment, going into dumpsters, it's just horrifying.
You know, I'm really, this is why I'm glad that I'm talking with you, because this is such an important thing to think about, that these things don't exist in a vacuum, and that you are kind of teaching people that if you don't like it, just tear it out and throw it away.
Instead of tweaking what you have, painting what you have, upcycling what you have, like there can be small changes that can make the space that you're in absolutely beautiful without the ripping, tearing, garbaging.
It seems like the notion is keep building until you get what you want. And that is a very consumer-driven way to look at things. And it also kind of goes back to what I was saying before about find the perfection in this. And if you don't see it, then just rip it out and put something else in.
A more sustainable version of that.
Yes.
I feel like there is a place in the market for someone to come in, and maybe this exists already, but if it doesn't, it sure should, and just be a place for what we have excavated out of a perfectly good home that's reusable, like a matchmaking service. What I have.
Right.
And what do you need?
Yes.
Within a geography, right? So that we're not shipping anything It just seems like that's a sustainable idea to pair as a resource for not only homeowners, but builders. And, you know, we need to make lower cost, more affordable, entry level options for houseless people. Why couldn't we use stuff that's come out of remodels?
Or even just reusing what you've pulled out, like if you've pulled out boards that can be reused, put that back in. There is a way to, like, you know, like you said, upcycle things or move things around. And I think some people do it through like Facebook groups and things where they say like, hey, I'm getting rid of this closet. Does anybody need these parts? You can come pick it up at my front door or whatever. I think that's out there. But man, if you could develop an app, that would be amazing.
Noteworthy. The Facebook group is called Buy Nothing. It's fantastic. It's nationwide. So if the listeners don't know about it, it's a great place to upcycle, gift forward. When I do my home functionality sessions, if editing is one of the cures, so to speak, we rid them of duplicates and things that they haven't touched or used. And I bring them home and I photograph each item and we gift it forward on the Buy Nothing Facebook group page. So it's that, but I'm only one person and my time is finite. So it would be interesting if there was some sort of an app to connect the things.
Oh, I love this idea. You should do that. Yeah, what you're getting at in my world, we look at it as the result of consumerism and the idea that it kind of is a mark of your social class status if you can, in this case, gut a house or redo a room or whatever and not have to keep any of it to reuse because you can afford to get all new stuff. And that is a really key point when you're thinking about homeownership. I think one of the things that channels like HGTV and even Pinterest do is drive home the notion that newer is better. And that doesn't always fit for everybody's budget. Some people really do need to reuse the stuff or find, like you said, a more effective way to do things. I love that idea. Can I ask you, do you have folks react with Pinterest the same way they do with HGTV? Like, has anyone ever brought you like their Pinterest vision board and said, this is what I want, and can we find this?
I ask for those because sometimes people say, you know, I want my space to be more beautiful. Mm-hmm. They just know it's broken and they say, I clean it and I've reduced all the things, extras. It still doesn't look like a magazine. And so what they're telling me is I want it to be more aesthetically beautiful for me. At the same time, I need to get a sense of what they like, because if I'm designing a space for me, that is not going to be your aesthetic. So I need to know what that looks like for them. Certain people like dark and moody and, you know, floral, and the next person is wanting bright and light wood and plants. And that's a whole different thing, both equally beautiful, but that doesn't mean it's universal. So I like to see it, but kind of more like a mood board creation rather than instructions.
Do you think that- Because if you look at like Fixer Upper or the one where it was the husband and wife and they got divorced and his name was Tariq, I think Christina and Tariq.
I think it's called Flip or Flop.
They very much had a very similar aesthetic for everything they did. Like those two shows.
Oh, yes.
You knew if you were going to get a Chip and Joanna Gaines house, it was going to have shiplap and French doors and look very country.
Farmhouse modern.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm wondering if, do you think that that's like people hire them specifically for that aesthetic, or do you think they have the ability to go outside of that aesthetic and we just don't see it because that's what the show wants to present?
I think when you create a following on HGTV, the producers are probably thinking this aesthetic is resonating with viewers, so we shouldn't stray too far from it because what we have is working. Mm-hmm. And the aesthetic that you're building, no matter which designer you're talking about, is working and resonating. So let's follow this to a degree. If you watch Fixer Upper, sometimes you'll see it does go outside a bit. I believe there was a show that there was a bachelor, a single guy that Joanna was designing for, and he wanted it more modern than her usual. And she absolutely accommodated that. So I do think that they're capable, but I think as the show is produced, they're very careful because what's successful, they don't want to derail.
Right.
And so, you know, and a lot of times in the real world, when you go to hire an interior designer, a lot of times you're hiring them because you like what they've done already and you want more of that. That doesn't mean designer A looks the same as designer B, looks the same as designer C. Presumably, you're going to choose your designer because of what they've done and you like that.
That's a really good.
So I think HGTV is just a televised version of that.
Yeah, I think that's a really good way to think about it.
One interesting line that I read in the Business of Home article. It's titled, How 25 Years of HGTV Has Transformed the Home Industry. They used the phrase, constant aspirational messaging.
Yeah, they know their like, crowd,
that's it.
Don't they? They
that's
know
it condensed.
Who's watching, and they are clearly paying attention to the metrics of what people are reacting to. You know what I think about when I think about that is, have you ever seen like during a presidential debate and there's a group that are assigned dials and then dial will go up and down depending on how much someone agrees with whatever someone is saying?
Yes.
And I think about that in terms of when HGTV does its market analysis. Like I just envision in my head, like people sitting in a room going, I love that wall color. Nope, I do not like that person's hair. I love the way they did the tile. Nope, don't like that bathroom set. Like it feels like they've gotten that down to a science of what they know people are going to want.
100%. I agree with you. And because it's just one channel, I'm not sure if this is current. The article that I'm looking at is from 2019, but apparently according to this, it reaches 8 of 10 households in the country. So that's a giant portion of that being spoon-fed, right?
That's bananas.
It's the epitome of immediate gratification.
Yeah. I'm assuming there are some people that watch just for like the aesthetic of it, right? Like they know they're never going to do that stuff to their house, but it's kind of fun to watch something be taken down to the studs and then something.
I mean, what's better than that?
Oh, 100%. It takes 30 minutes and you can have a whole new house, right? And therein lies, I think, the fun and also the part that I take issue with. Because, you know, I think most folks know when they're watching that this is not the way that home renovations normally go. But they also do a good job of selling the fantasy and making it seem like these things are not as expensive as they usually are, or don't take as long as they usually do, or, you know, you don't normally like get a plumber in within an hour to fix an issue because you broke a pipe or.
For sure.
You know, there is that part.
There aren't many people that have a plumber that they can just text real quick. I do,
yeah.
But I don't pretend that they're available that fast.
But you should, considering your line of work, right? Like,
right.
Like the average, when we first bought our house and we had, what was the first thing that went wrong? We had wind damage and we had to have the roof repaired. And neither one of us knew how to deal with insurance companies. It took like 4 months to get the roof done, even though we were promised it would be done in like 4 weeks. You know, just things like that the reality is very different. And I get that they're selling the fantasy. I get that part.
What's interesting, to your point, what's interesting about that is when people come to me and we have conversations, even though our brains know that's a show, they know nothing happens in 60 minutes, they're still horrified when they find out they're not going to be able to get a drywaller in for a month and a half.
Yeah.
Like, I think we know that it's not real, but you don't have the juxtaposition of, unless you're in the industry, how long stuff actually takes, just sometimes just because it's booked out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. During the pandemic, I wanted to repaint my bathroom because I was bored and there was a color drought. Like there wasn't enough color out there. And I went to Lowe's and I picked out this very pretty blue. And the man very kindly looked at me and said, there's no way we're going to get this paint color for you because there's literally, it's not available. It's just not, it's not there. And I was like, what do you mean it's not there? It's color. You just mix it. And he was like, nope, we don't have the ability to do it. And I went to a few other places and they all said the same thing. Like, nope, color isn't available right now. Everyone's repainting their homes trying to do something.
What a metaphor. It's a pandemic, so we don't do color right now. The world is black and white, in case you didn't know. Until we're back to regular programming, we're going to be in black and white.
Yeah, it was so funny. That's so true. And I painted my bathroom white. It says, because I literally couldn't sit still. I had to do something. And so I still have a white bathroom. I haven't gotten around to fixing it.
That's fascinating. You were bored. Mm-hmm. And so you painted your bathroom.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Do you enjoy painting?
No, but the pandemic was long and my husband works in healthcare, so it was extremely stressful.
Fascinating that you don't enjoy it and you still chose to paint your bathroom.
Yep.
So do you watch HGTV?
I do not. I used to. I would say it's been a solid decade since I've sat down and watched anything significant. I saw the Chip and Joanna Gaines show when it first came out and I liked it initially. And then as they got bigger and bigger and their stuff started appearing in Target, I started to be a little turned off by the hegemony of it all, the sameness of all of it. It's not been on my radar for a while. I think before I became a homeowner, it was more interesting. And then when you become a homeowner and the reality of what you're dealing with versus what is being sold to you is so different. And if you're a pragmatic person, you're going, there's nothing on this show that is helpful for me at this point, because I know, like you said, that I can't tear down a wall and have somebody in, you know, within a day to take care of it for me. These things all take time. I do like Pinterest. I haven't done Pinterest in a long time, but I do like the pinning of the pretty things.
I think there's a place for all of these things as tools. I think Pinterest is a great place for a big giant board. I go in there and I use it when I have a project, or sometimes when I need to start the new year, or when I'm curating things for a particular client. Mm-hmm. But then I don't go back. I find that it gives me ads and suggestions that I should not have seen because I can't unsee it.
Mm.
I put in the most insane Buster and Punch light switch. I turned the entryway of my home, because we don't have one. You basically open the front door and you spill right into the middle of our main floor, which is an open floor plan. So there's not like a hall or an area where you can hang your coat or anything like that. It just enters into the middle of our house. And I wanted to make that a little bit more defined. So we put up some really cool paneling and I ran a long runner carpet on the floor in front of that. So it felt like when you walked in, you had a visual cue of where you could stop and set your purse and take your shoes off. It's black felt in between these wood slats. And I have white light switches, which stuck out like I was wearing, you know, bright white sneakers and white socks with black pants. Let's just say that. And so I had to change it. And of course, our phones listened to us. And I got fed an ad for a company called Buster and Punch, which I believe they are from England. The most gorgeous black metal with gold rivets. It looks like a high-end music amp. It's so beautiful. And I couldn't get it out of my head. So when you go and spend, you know, $280 for four switches, you're mad. But I had to.
Yeah.
Because I saw it and I couldn't unsee it. come on. So I am hesitant to go back into Pinterest because of those situations, because I don't want to see something I then have to have and I can't unsee.
Yeah, I think the algorithm and the urge to comply with what we're targeted is an entirely different podcast, but it's very real. And you're right, the phones are listening to you. They always are. And they know what to show you to make you want to buy stuff.
100%. It has my number for sure. So instead of asking questions about your space and your reason in this episode, I want to challenge you the next time you need to make a decision about your home. I would like for you to question if you're making it because of something you saw on TV or on Instagram or on Pinterest, fill in the blank. Or are you making it because this reminds you of something from your childhood, or it happens to be your favorite color? If you're undertaking a renovation, can you gift the things forward that are simply outdated? Can they go into the hands of a builder managing the assembly of housing for the homeless in your town? How can we do better here as people? How can we get the things we are tearing out of these homes into the hands of people who need it, want it, whose lives could be dramatically improved by it? I love the last line of the article titled, "How 25 Years of HGTV Has Transformed the Home Industry," on businessofhome.com website. It says, "With the nation as divided today as perhaps at any time in history, with unprecedented levels of vitriol and partisanship coming from the media, many surmise that HGTV, politically, socially, geographically, racially, and philosophically neutral, is the perfect channel for public and private spaces where anything more biased creates the potential for controversy, discord, and friction." End quote. At some point last year, I had the introduction to this podcast redone and have been spending time going back and adding it to all the episodes from beginning to end. I dove into episode 15 and fell in love again. I seriously didn't remember recording this episode and felt so inspired and energized after listening. I had only intended on swapping out the intro, but like a nerd, I sat there and listened to the whole thing. My own podcast. Ridiculous and fantastic all at the same time. It's titled Goals, and one might think that is something you should only listen to on January 1st. But if your spaces aren't matching who you want to be, this could be enjoyed at any point in the year to consider how you might tweak your space to support you and your passions. It's one of those episodes that can be revisited to check in with yourself every now and again, because it asks important questions about your feelings, about the things you love, and invites you to sit in that friendly space with yourself to imagine how things might be tweaked to move the needle within your home a bit toward pleasure and fulfillment and away from stress and anxiety. I don't know at what point you started listening to the Home, Space, and Reason podcast, but I created it to be listened to from beginning to end, never repeating topics like bathrooms or scale, proportion, and art, specifically because I hoped you could indulge in them all. Sometimes life starts happening quickly and you don't have time to listen, but other times we find ourselves stuck indoors in a snowstorm or walking on an especially sunny day and wanting something to listen to that's positive. You can start from the beginning and take it in little bits at a time. I appreciate you spending your valuable time with me. If you're so inclined, I'd love the effort of a share in a forum or in an email to a friend, maybe a post on LinkedIn or any other social spot you may play in. Recommendations go a long way in helping others find podcasts worth listening to. I think there's enough negativity in the world right now, so it feels good to share something positive and relaxing. Thank you, my friend. If you happen to know someone thinking of buying or selling here in the greater Metro Portland, Oregon area, kindly send them my way. The finest compliment I can receive is the confidence of your referral. What are you grateful for today? I'm personally grateful that the practice of producing this podcast has put me in touch with people like Adrian, whom I may never have crossed paths with otherwise. I relish in the opportunity to sit with others who also enjoy chewing on interesting topics deeper than just surface level, and I sincerely hope that I can come up with a reason for our paths to cross again. If you'd like more of this kind of content, you can subscribe to Little Bits, my weekly newsletter about home functionality, with a short video containing a thought or a tip or a trick to think through about your space and your reason. It's intentionally short, and you can find the link in the show notes.